Hi, and welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums.
Guitar up. One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, we return to the scene of the crime of the century.
I think it's magic chemistry and timing and where people's heads are at and what's going on in their lives. There's so many ingredients. And it just happened that with Crime of the Century, they all lined up. Hello, I'm Roger Hodgson in the studio for Supertramp's Crime of the Century.
Supertramp got its humble beginnings in 1969 when a Dutch-eccentric millionaire music biz wannabe befriended a British band called The Joint. When The Joint burned out, the band's frontman, singer-songwriter Rick Davies, was bankrolled by this Flying Dutchman to form a new group. Hundreds of auditions later, that's right, hundreds, the band was set with the new name Daddy this time, which included a multi-instrumentalist Roger Hodgson on guitar, bass, keyboards, and vocals. As a band name, Daddy was quickly divorced, so they nicked one from a popular novel of the early 1970s entitled Diary of a Supertramp. Davies, Hodgson, and company signed a recording deal in London as Supertramp, but the new name did little to popularize the first two albums, which languished in obscurity. Starving and frustrated during a Scandinavian tour in the bitter cold of winter, the members of this early version of Supertramp were ready to throw in the towel. Except they needed the towel to stay warm. Roger Hodgson recalls the bitter end.
So we really felt like we were going nowhere, and certainly we weren't being managed too well. And I think it was soon after that that the band kind of crumbled. We all decided that was it, we've had it. And we actually split up for 2 days. Yeah, I decided I was off to India. I desperately wanted to go to India anyway at that time, and I thought this is the opportunity. I don't know how it came back together again. I think it was the bass player or our sound engineer said, listen, this is crazy. There's too much music here to throw it away. The chemistry between you and Ricka is too valuable. We've got to give it one more go. And we decided that, okay, we'll come off the road. Let's stop what we're doing. Let's live off selling the equipment that we have, if we have to. Let's put together the songs that we had waiting in the wings, which we knew were pretty good songs, and put together a tape and start all over again. And that's what we did. And the tape became Crime of the Century.
I can see you in the morning when you go to school. Don't forget your books. You know you've got to learn the golden rule. The teacher tells you stop your play and get on with your work. And be like Johnny Too Good. Don't you know he never shirks. He's coming along. coming along.
School was my song. I guess school was pretty fresh in my mind. I was 20, I don't know, 23 at the time. Still trying to break out of my schooling, the schooling conditioning. And I just really felt like I wanted to have a go at it, have a go at my schooling a little bit. This album as a whole, and school in particular, was probably the last collaboration that Rick and I ever did jointly. During Crime, the whole process of Crime was kind of us finding our feet as writers and as people. And during that, we worked pretty closely together on School and Bloody Well Right in particular. From Crisis onwards, we definitely wrote separately. It seemed like who we were as people became more defined, and it was much more difficult to kind of meet in the middle.
After being convinced to give it one more go, Roger Hodgson and Rick Davis agreed that some changes were necessary.
At the time all this craziness was happening, I mean, Rick and I had a very, very close relationship. It was more the musicians we had around us. We had a drummer that we needed to get rid of, but who was a very, very difficult guy to get rid of. So in a way, it was easier to disband the band and then reform than tell him that his time was up. And we had a sax player who also really wasn't cutting it. And we knew we just didn't have the band that we were looking for. We didn't really know what we were looking for, but we knew it wasn't what we had. So it was really at that time when we split up and when we reformed again, when we started looking for musicians, that's when the band clicked. And we knew we had the band that we were looking for.
This new configuration of Supertramp featured Davis and Hodgson as the main songwriters, fellow Englishman John Helliwell on saxophone, a Scotsman named Doogie Thompson on bass, and drummer Bob Siebenberg, who hailed from Southern California. With a lineup they could finally be happy with, Hodgson and Davis set out to renew their relationship with A&M Records. But as they quickly found out, it was not going to be that easy. Here's Roger Hodgson.
Well, actually, between the first two albums and Crime of the Century, there was quite a long period. And when we took the demos for Crime of the Century to A&M, we discovered that they'd gone through a lot of changes too, and we hardly knew anyone in the office. When we walked in and we said, "Hi, we're here," they kind of said, "Who are you?" and we said, "Hi, we're on your label." And they said, "Are you?" And they didn't even know we were. So luckily, the A&R guy at A&M at the time, he kind of took us under his wing. And ultimately, actually, he left A&M to become our manager. We really had a good relationship with him. Because it was such a new fledgling band, and we were still getting to know each other, and we had to rehearse and do a lot of preparation. Take it and put it in a house in the country in England, and where we could get it together, as they said at the time. And which is actually what we did, and which was a magical period for Supertramp. We went off into the West Country in England, and we lived in this farmhouse with wives and dogs and kids, and so it was a magical time. It really bonded the whole band, and it also created the magic that was Crime of the Century. We had time to really think about it and fine tune it and get the songs in the right order and really have a master plan before we went in the studio.
Supertramp selected Ken Scott to produce their third album, having previously worked with David Bowie and the Beatles.
I'm not really aware that we really tuned into what was happening at the time. I think what we were really tuning into was what the five of us together made, because we were five very, very different people from very, very diverse backgrounds. When we played, there was definitely magic. Magic happened. It was the first time, really, that the band felt like a band. And it swung, and there was wonderful color with John Sachs. From that era, I really don't think we were tuning into or trying to cater to an era. I remember earlier, I mean, for the first Supertramp album, we were very conscious of the music that was happening at the time, the progressive underground movement. But during Crime of the Century, we weren't listening to hardly anything.
bloody well right. You got a bloody right to say. Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
Davis' song Bloody Well Right from The Crime of the Century became one of Supertramp's first familiar songs on American FM rock radio in 1974. It's now included on The Crime of the Century, remastered in pristine sound. The two CD and three vinyl record deluxe sets also include an impressive complete live March 1975 concert from London's Hammersmith Odeon Theatre, in which Supertramp performs the entire Crime of the Century album live, along with songs which would later appear on the follow-up album, Crisis, What Crisis? Roger Hodgson will share some of that a little later. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Roger Hodgson, investigating the crime of the century.
Welcome back to the scene of The Crime of the Century by Supertramp. I'm Roger Hodgson with Redbeard.
Thank you, Roger. I vividly recall receiving Supertramp's Crime of the Century album at my radio station in 1974. The band's quirky name did nothing to make me pull it out of the stack, which included Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti, Bachman-Turner Overdrive, and Herbie Hancock's Headhunters. But there was something intriguing about that now-famous Crime of the Century album cover design. But when I heard the cinematic, atmospheric opening to the first song, School, the sound blew me away. Supertramp singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Roger Hodgson credits the spectacular production on Crime to then recording engineer and producer Ken Scott.
I think you have to give Ken his due. Ken was incredible. He was a man driven. And I think the sonic quality of this album has definitely got to be his doing. But I also think, you know, there was a definite chemistry. You can never tell when an album or how an album's going to go. An album seems to be like a pregnancy. You know, every pregnancy is different, and you just don't know what it's going to be like until you're in it. Some go easily, some go very difficult, and there's a whole different set of circumstances that go into making an album. And sometimes you can have the most wonderful songs, but the end result is terrible. It's all about magic. I think it's magic, chemistry, timing, and where people's heads are at and what's going on in their lives. There's so many ingredients. And it just happened that with Crime of the Century, they all lined up. I have a soft spot for Dreamer. I remember doing it in my living room, doing a demo of it, and I think, I don't know where it came from, but I know it came out all in a rush, and I did all kinds of weird things like banging cardboard boxes and banging electric fires and anything that could clang, just I don't know why I did it at the time, to tell you the truth, but anyway, that demo really pointed the direction the song wanted to go. And in fact, when we started doing the song in the studio, it started going in a different direction, and for a while, we actually tried to duplicate the demo. We actually would play to the demo and try and duplicate it, but the tempo was so off on the demo, we had to scrap it. We actually tried to get as close to the demo as possible. That's why there aren't too many real drums in there. There's more. I think there are even cardboard boxes on there. There's all kinds of things. There's mouth noises, and there's glasses being, you know, when you put your scrape your finger around the edge of the glass, make that real high sound. There's that on it. There's all kinds of things happening. It's a good one for headphones, that song. Yeah, well, Dreamer really took off in England. It was a very different song and really attracted the attention of the public. Very different for the music of the time.
Understand. yourself so tight. What do you need? A second-hand movie star to tend you. I, as a boy, I believe the same, the cure for pain was love. How would it be if you could see the world?
Hide in Your Shell from 74's The Crime of the Century album is an underexposed treat that pointed the way musically to a future collection 3 years later as Even in the Quietest Moments. Still to come, Roger Hodgson once and for all settles the questions of whether The Crime of the Century is a concept album, who inspired the concert showstopper Rudy, and just what was The Crime of the Century. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard in the studio with Roger Hodgson for the Supertramp's brilliant Crime of the Century.
Welcome back to the scene of The Crime of the Century by Supertramp. I'm Roger Hodgson with Redbeard.
Thank you, Roger. Listening today to Supertramp's breakthrough album, Crime of the Century, it's easy to see how, within 5 years, Supertramp would make one of the biggest-selling albums of the 70s decade in Breakfast in America. But clearly, 1974's Crime of the Century was a bridge to all of that, according to singer-songwriter Roger Hodgson.
I think Crime of the Century was a major education. It really made us wake up to what was possible. It gave us a chance to see what was possible. It was the first time we'd had a shot to and the opportunity to really flex our musical muscles, our arranging muscles. That, well, the start of everything you've heard and you know and people know, it really was the start of Supertramp. I don't really consider before Crime of the Century Supertramp. It was like school years somehow. But Crime of the Century and the tour and the success that followed it suddenly propelled us into the world. There's only, it's funny, you only, before you achieve success, there's only, you only have that period once when you know you have something red hot and you know you have the chance for success. And there's that electric excitement around that you know it's possible and you're going for it. And that was what Crime of the Century was. We knew we had something very, very special. And we knew we were creating something very, very special, and we were working very hard. But you're right, it was prior to success. When success comes in any shape or form, it changes the whole ball of wax, the whole shape of the way you do things. So there is only that one time when it's magic.
The ambitious scope of the Crime of the Century album gave Supertramp the desire to plan an extravagant stage show, even if they weren't quite ready to headline yet.
Yeah, when we went on tour with Crime of the Century, we played theatres mostly, but where we didn't, we tried to create a theatre environment. We had our own curtains. We took our own curtains around so that when people came in to see the show, they didn't see any of the equipment, any of the hardware. And it was only when the lights went down that the curtains rolled back and there was a bluish, ghostly pale across the stage, and then the harmonica started. It was a wonderful show. Very, very surreal almost.
Rudy's on a train to nowhere, halfway down the line. He don't want to get there, but he needs time. He ain't sophisticated, oh well educated. After all the hours he's wasted, still he needs time. He needs time. He needs a time for living. He needs time. Someone just to see him. He ain't had no loving.
Yeah, I often look at Crime of the Century and think that Rudy is Rick. I think if there is a character, or if there is a concept through Crime of the Century, it seems like Rudy is the character that, from his schooling, seems to just go downhill. Thinks he's crazy in Asylum, and he's on a train to nowhere in Rudy, in the song Rudy. And it very much was autobiographical in a way, with where Rick was at the time. I mean, he's a a very eccentric guy anyway, and doesn't operate too well in social circumstances. And I think he was pretty lonely. He didn't have a girlfriend and didn't have many at the time anyway. But a very, very interesting guy when you get to know him. But he was very difficult to get to know and really kept to himself, kept in his shell a lot. And I really think that he was writing about himself when he wrote Rudy. On stage two, we had a wonderful film for Rudy, probably one of the highlights of the show. In fact, I think it was the highlight of the show. A train ride that was filmed. There was a camera put on a train back in the 1950s, I guess, and it was shot at high speed to make the train look like it was going 500 miles an hour. And it was the train ride from London to Brighton, and we managed to procure it from the BBC. It went on for about 3 minutes, and you felt like you were, if you can imagine, you were on the front of a railway train hurtling down these railway lines at 500 miles an hour. And if you can imagine that blown up on a screen that fills the whole of the back of the stage, you're on that train. I mean, it was incredible. And then the music's going, chick-chick-chick-chick-chick-chick-chick. I mean, it was a very, very exciting moment in the show. I often think there's a cycle of three. I don't know why, but it seems like there's a cycle of three. It's certainly in my life, it works a lot. There were two albums before Crime, and then there were two albums, and then Breakfast. And even in my solo career, I've seen it. It seems like there's two albums or the two projects or two whatever when you're learning stuff, and then the third time, you try something, it's a success. You know, often whatever it is, maybe you're hitting a golf ball, and the first two times you miss it, and I'll just try it one more time. The third time you hit it, it may be a law of nature or something that. There's the magic in the number three. Well, I remember after Crime was over, I took off for Morocco. with a friend of mine. And actually, I went there for Christmas. I went for 6 weeks and got way out in the boonies. I stayed in a place called Paradise Valley, I remember, and totally disconnected from the music industry and England and English culture, and had an incredible time. It had been released while I was gone, or actually maybe it was released just before I left. And when I came back in February, the first thing that I saw when I hit the London streets was I saw a Melody Maker on the newspaper stand, and the headline was "Crime of the Century Hits Number One." So I was just, was back into the thick of it. I couldn't believe it. And when I came back, it had all happened. The show we put together for Crime of the Century was so unique and required quite a lot of setting up that we just couldn't see how we could go and do anything but headline, wherever it was, America or Europe. We were lucky in that the agents and the promoters just took a shot, took a risk, and put us on in theaters in America, and we went out and headlined. And often we'd arrive in a city and we'd hear that there were only 200 tickets sold or whatever, and we'd actually all be out in the streets giving away tickets to try and get people in for the show. We had to do it. There was no other choice. Otherwise, we would have had to ditch most of the show in order to support. It was our first time in America. We didn't really know what supporting or headlining really meant in America. I also think there were different times back then. I think the album had really fired the record company and the agent, and they were all very, very excited about this new band that had a very exciting album. I think people were more willing to take risks on an artistic level back then, or for artistic reasons, I should say. Generally, nowadays, unfortunately, money rules the roost. I mean, it's if you're going to lose money, you don't do it. And back then, we had incredible support from both A&M Records and our agent. There was still a lot of innocence about the industry back then that there isn't nowadays, I don't think. Also, I think people were willing to forego high wages or whatever back then. I mean, they just do it for the love of doing it. And the industry is a very different animal. The world's a very, very different nowadays. The Crime of the Century and the tour and the success that followed it suddenly propelled us into the world. When we first started thinking about Crime of the Century, we had the title, Crime of the Century. We knew, even though the song or the lyrics for the song wasn't written, the title of the song was there. You know, he had a line with the Crime of the Century, and that really sparked our minds in thinking concept album. Maybe we can make the whole album into a concept album. And I think the first two tracks, School and Bloody Well Right, were almost as far as the concept went.
Now they're planning the crime of the century. Well, what will it be? Read all about their schemes and adventuring. Yes, it's well worth the fee.
For the full deluxe edition of Supertramp's Crime of the Century, the remastered original studio album is combined with a complete performance of the album at London's Hammersmith Odeon from March 1975, plus a book with new interviews and photos on 2 CDs or 3 vinyl records in stores and online now. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio. Thank you, my guest Roger Hodgson. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.